We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
All right. Oh, it worked. All right. Perfect. We haven't done this in for... Oh, excuse me.
Vault.
That one came out of nowhere. All right, here we go.
With your host, Wayne New, Greg Donald, and Lou Fass.
Hey, Happy New Year, you sons of bitches. What's everybody up to? How are you, Tony?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's late. I'm getting a little tired, but you know what? What better night what better time than tonight to spend it with you guys talking about UFO?
That's right. Not UFOs, but UFO the band.
Oh, wait, the band?
You thought we were talking about UFOs, like unidentified flying objects? Oh man.
You guys know I'm a big conspiracy guy.
You know, the guy took a one-way trip to Area 51 on the grounds that he wouldn't come back for you, Wayne. How dare you?
How are you, Lou?
I'm good. Happy New Year, everybody. But not only to the sons of bitches, I'd also like to give a shout-out to the rat bastards out there.
Hello, all you rat bastards. And yes, today we're talking about UFO, the band, the top five songs and top five albums.
According to us,
according to these guys here, these Tony and Lou right here. Me, I don't know. I'm gonna have to try to figure out what songs I like. But hello, Catman, welcome back to the show. Happy New Year to you.
What up, Peter Chris?
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of UFO. I just actually last week, because we were going to be doing this, started to listen to a lot of their albums. I started from the beginning, and Lou, you told me that those first two albums are not going to sound like the rest of the albums that the band put out. And you were right. They were really far out there.
Yep. They sound nothing like the Shankar era or anything after it.
No, nothing at all. Really spacey. I mean, they were cool, you know, for its time, you know, so it was interesting. But yeah, I went all the way up to Mechanics, really couldn't find anything I liked. And I really never went back to finish the rest of the discography. So I kind of stopped there.
See, I'm surprised you didn't, I know that after Mechanics was Making Contact, but the album after that was Misdemeanor. And I know you're a huge Magnum fan, Wayne. Right. And Jim Simpson, the drummer who played on A Storyteller's Night, was actually the drummer on Misdemeanor. So yeah, I thought maybe you would have given that a shot.
I should have, because I actually, when I was doing... Tony's got so many albums here.
I got all my UFO records.
He made a whole crate for tonight.
Yeah, whole crate. Misdemeanor.
I was doing a Magnum show for yesterday, which was supposed to be on freeworld.fm, but something happened and some technical difficulties, and the show wasn't on last night. So next week I'll play the Magnum show.
Rest in peace, Tony Clarkin.
Yes, but
yeah, absolutely.
Really sad, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to say rest in peace to somebody else.
Oh.
Rest in peace to Rage Against the Machine. It has ceased to be. It has gone to meet its maker. It is an ex-band. This band is no more. Bereft of life, it rests in peace. It has gone to meet its maker and joined the choir invisible. Goodbye, Rage Against the Machine. Happiest day of my life.
They'll be back.
Oh,
they'll
fuck. Be
back. and we lost James Kotak last week as well from Scorpions. Used to be the drummer in the Scorpions.
He was the nice guy in the band when I met them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was cool. I met him several times over here. Just super cool guy, man. Just funny. Yeah, guy had so much history. I mean, he even played with Michael Schenker at one point. He's on one of the Macaulay Schenker group albums.
The 92 release on Impact that also had Jeff Pilson on bass, which I like that album.
Yeah, great album. Mm-hmm.
I was looking up the Magnum history and stuff like that, and then I did see that some guys from UFO went to Magnum, and yeah, it was a drummer. Catman, he heard No Heavy Petting in 83 and Sabotage, thought they were both great. Good for you. Sabotage being Black Sabbath. By the way, I did finally get my my box sets. They were late for Christmas. I got my
Are we doing recent? Okay, cool.
No, it was just off the top of my head. And
You got the Sabotage.
I got
box.
That, and I got the other Technical Ecstasy and Sabotage, and the live album and Paranoid. Yeah. The vinyl box set finally came.
Christmas was good to me. I got the CD box set for Paranoid Super Deluxe. Got the deluxe edition of the original Sabbath. Deluxe edition of the Paranoid album, because you can never have enough. Mm. Deluxe edition of Master of Reality, and this, which is now out of print, the final live release of Heaven and Hell with Ronnie James Dio. So
I always wish I'd picked that one up on vinyl when I had a chance. It's like super expensive now. I do have the CD of that. Yeah.
Aren't they all expensive? It's so insane. Like the prices of this vinyl that just keeps skyrocketing.
Yeah, I got the Coverdale Page vinyl reissues on two LPs. My girlfriend got it for me for Christmas, and it's only available in Japan. So it's already expensive, but then you have to get it from Japan, so it's even more expensive.
I still had never heard that album. I'll have to maybe get that at some point.
Really good album. I'll tell you a quick funny story about that record.
It is a good album.
When it came out, I really didn't pay that much of mind to it, because I don't know, just at that time frame, I was really listening to a lot of thrash and stuff, even though I'm a huge Whitesnake fan and Led Zeppelin. But I didn't really get it when it first came out. I heard the single, was it Pride and Joy or whatever. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I was riding down the highway one day, and I heard the song Say Hello to Heaven by, Temple of the Dog, mm-hmm. you know, okay. Chris Cornell. Mm-hmm. And I heard it, and I'm going, wow, this is a great song. Man, Coverdale sounds great. This must be from that Coverdale Page album. And I told a friend, hey, I want to get that record, because it's got that song Say Hello to Heaven. He goes, that's not Coverdale. That's Chris Cornell. I'm like, oh, wow. So I bought the Temple of the Dog album, and it's one of the few grunge albums I even own from the grunge era.
But it's my favorite album. Pearl Jam album.
Yeah, best Pearl Jam album.
Yeah. Well, we're not here to talk about Temple of Dog or Pearl Jam. We are here to talk about UFO. Who wants to start? Since you guys are two huge fans, I'll let one of you go.
Tony, being that you're the guest, please, the floor is yours.
I got into UFO. I didn't know anything about them, of course, in their heyday. I got into them probably about I first heard them, I think, in 1985. I bought a compilation album, and I had one of those songs from the early days. I had them doing the song Boogie, which is just a boogie rock song. And that's from their space rock period, when like Mick Bolton on guitar before Michael Schenker came in. So like around 72, 73.
That's a good track.
And it's a cool song, but it, you know, I was like, okay, it sounds like ZZ Top or anything else, boogie rock, you know? And so I didn't really get into them. And I started hanging out with a guy he was older. I think I was about 18 or so. And he was in his 30s, like 35, 36 years old. And he was turning me on to, you know, Uriah Heep and UFO and just different bands that I didn't know a whole lot about. And maybe I had a greatest hits album like Uriah Heep or whatever. And he gave me Strangers in the Night, and he gave me Mechanics. And I think No Place to Run were the ones that he gave me to check out. And I loved it. I thought it was great. So the first one I ended up buying, because I loved the song Doctor so much off the live album, I bought Phenomena, and I bought it on cassette, and that actually has become my all-time favorite UFO album. It's a very mellow album, but it rocks. It's very balanced between mellow and rocking tracks, and it's just a really good record. And I kind of just went from there. I started, you know, picking up more stuff by them. I remember, you know, in the CD, when CDs were getting popular, it was hard to find their stuff on CD at the time. You could get it as imports. So I got one of those like UFO greatest hits CDs that came out. You know, I just listened to that all the time. And I was just going out picking up the cassettes and the vinyl, whatever I could find them. And you could find them in the used stores for $2-3. So, I love Michael Schenker. He's like my favorite guitar player. I love his solo stuff. But I do like the stuff that they did after he left. Paul Chapman was a brilliant guitar player. They made some really good albums with him. I remember picking up the Misdemeanor album, and that was very, very poppy. That was another one. I bought like a videotape called Breaking Metal, and it had all these different bands on it, like from Europe and stuff. And it had some live UFO with from that period when they had Atomic Tommy M on guitar. And that was during, it kind of looked like a hair band, you know, and it was really poppy sounding. I mean, of course, Atomic Tommy M was more of a Van Halen style guitarist. And but that's, it's an okay record. It kind of grew on me over the years. But I got the, they were just a band that I thought I'd never get to see. I never thought I'd see Shanker. I never thought I'd see UFO. This is, you know, late 90s or mid 90s, 1995 or 1993, I guess it was. Was it three or four that the Walk on Water album came out? Do you remember, Lou?
Yeah, it was recorded in 95, released in 95, but they had reunited in 93.
That's what I was thinking. 95, I bought Walk on Water. It was a Japanese import on CD. I was actually at a KISS convention in New York, and there was a vendor there that had a bunch of CDs. Japanese imports, and he had it. I think it was like $35 for a CD.
Was this the KISS convention that was at Roseland? The one, yes, that was actual Kisses?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And so we listened to, I remember listening to it on the way home, was thinking it was so great, you know, and I think it was a great comeback album. And then I think it was a few months later, we were just talking about the King from Deceased. King called me and he says, "Hey man, there's a club up here in Northern Virginia called Jack's, and UFO with Michael Shanker." So I was like, "Yeah." So I had never been to Jack's, and ended up being one of my favorite places to go to. And I went for my first time, and I saw UFO with Michael Shanker and the Lights Out lineup. Paul Raymond, of course, but they didn't have Andy Parker.
It was Simon Wright, right?
Right, from Dio, and AC/DC, of course. And one of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life. Maybe it's because I thought that I'd never get to see it, but it was just like the album. The guy came out, you know, "Please welcome from England, UFO," and he busted right into Nashville thing, and the crowd just went nuts, you know. And then I got to see him a few times with Michael Shanker, and then I saw him a few times after he left, and they brought in Vinnie Moore. I thought the first album that they did with Vinnie Moore, "You Are Here," was a really good record. So they kept putting out stuff right up to the end. The last time I was supposed to go see them, they were playing Atlanta, and they were doing a co-headlining show with Blue Oyster Cult, and they ended up, UFO pulled off like the day of the show, and didn't play, so we didn't end up going. It was just one of those things where Phil was, they had been on a cruise, or they were going away to a cruise. They were going to take a cruise, one of those rock cruises, and he had gotten sick. And I think he was trying to get well before he got on the boat. And that was just before the COVID breakout as well. So who knows, you know, what he was sick with, but they've been, you know, I've been a big fan of these guys for years. I actually met Paul Chapman a couple years back. You know, he passed away. Maybe 2-3 years ago, maybe now.
Yeah, around that time. It was like we lost him, then we lost Paul Raymond, then we lost Pete Way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Paul Chapman was touring. I think I read on Blabbermouth that he was touring with this Canadian band called Killer Bee. And I looked and they had a date near where I live in North Carolina. So I went to see that show and never heard of Killer Bee. Nobody was there. It was probably 20 people. I think I posted something on Facebook about him being there, and some UFO fans came out. But he was super cool. He hung out with us afterwards, signed all my, you know, UFO records that I brought, and I bought some stuff from him. He had an anthology CD and stuff that he was selling, and super cool. And told me all about his old BC Rich guitars that he used to play and stuff, and just super cool guy. It was great to finally meet him, and it was sad when he passed, for sure. Yeah, like I said, I got a long history of these guys. Just love them. Great band.
Some comments in the chat from Def 2 Demands. He said, "Tony, you and me saw some of the same concerts back in the 80s. He lived in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And his first concert was Accept an Ozzy in 1984.
And I was there.
See, cross paths.
I was at that show. It was supposed to be Motley Crue, and we got Accept.
I think you struck gold.
We did, yeah. Except blew Ozzy off the stage that night, made me a fan.
Nice. And he says he also remembers you telling one of your telling on one of the live streams how Jakey Lee hanging out signing autographs on the side, and he was right there, and he got him to sign a ticket.
Yeah, that was in Raleigh. The what was it? The Red Dragon Cartel show.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Go ahead, Lou. How about you?
I first heard of UFO back in 86. My brother had the Misdemeanor cassette, and it was the first UFO album I remember him buying that was brand new. But he had Lights Out, and he had not the Wild, the Willing, and the Innocent. He had Mechanics, but I didn't listen to those two albums. I heard Misdemeanor. I remember the first UFO song I ever heard was Mean Streets. And I really, really liked it a lot. But then it got to a point where it was kind of like, you know, out of sight, out of mind. So over the next 12 years, you know, I'm reading about UFO, but I'm still not bringing myself to really listen to them. Even though I knew who Michael Schenker was because of the Michael Schenker group and Macaulay Schenker group. And I knew that his brother was Rudolph and the Scorpions. So fast forward to 98. My Walkman is there, and then all of a sudden, like, I saw that the Lights Out cassette was in there. I put it on, and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't know what this is. I didn't put this cassette in there. It was my brother's Walkman. And I just remember the first song I heard from that album was Getting Ready, and I'm like, oh, I like this. This is like really melodic. It rocks. And I was like, wow, Schenker could you kind of take for granted the fact that he was a German in a British band. So, you know, for them to be able to strike conversation, I'm sure was incredibly difficult.
They said it was. Yeah.
But the fact that they wrote such an incredible album. I mean, Lights Out is one of my top 10 favorite studio albums ever. But I have to give credit to Atomic Tommy M, Tommy McLendon, who I'm happy to say that I'm friends with on Facebook. And I said that I was like, dude, I think with that album, you proved to be like one of the most criminally underrated guitar players that came out of the 80s. And, you know, he was really humbled by that. But, you know, and we've always talked. He's liked my posts and vice versa. And, you know, but Schenker, once I heard him on Lights Out and I heard those all the songs that he wrote, I became obsessed. No pun intended, obsession and all that. So then I just became like, you know, I started digging down the rabbit hole. And, you know, I just, there's, Wayne, I know you and I have a difference of opinion when it comes to UFO. I'm guessing for me, the reason why I love it so much is because I just, as a guitarist, I love the riffs. And, you know, the riffs, in my opinion, make great songs. To me, I think that UFO should be up there with Thin Lizzy and Motorhead in terms of recognition. I think personally, Phil Mogg is one of the best lyricists. I love his stuff because it kind of just, you know, it hits three places. It hits the brain, it hits the heart, and it hits the nether regions, you know? And it's a shame that he had a heart issue that is now prohibiting him from going on the road. So UFO is no longer an entity, which I'm sad to say, but, you know, 50 years of great music and the offshoots of UFO, you know, from MSG, you know, you have Wasted. And I, you know, want everyone to check out the album that they did with Paul Chapman called The Good, The Bad, and The Wasted. It's a really good hard rocking album. And also love the Mogwai. You know, Pete Way was supposed to be in Fast Way, but due to contractual obligations, that never happened. But it
odd way.
There we go. You know, and Neil Carter himself, who joined UFO on The Wild, the Willing, and the Innocent, you know, he ended up being a sideman for Gary Moore for a long time. He was also in Wild Horses with Jimmy Bain. So you know, I mean, this is a band of some of the highest caliber musicians. And I think in terms of a rhythm section, you know, they had one of the best with Pete Way and Andy Parker. You know, I just love the way they locked in. I mean, it was simple but effective. So, yeah, I mean, UFO is one of my top 10 favorite bands ever. So I'm happy that we're doing an episode that's where we're talking about them.
Very, very cool. I wish I had the history with this band like you guys did, but I only heard Dr. Doctor. You know,
because
up.
They've opened in every Iron Maiden concert.
Well, yeah. I've heard it before that. I think I've heard it on the radio when I was younger. But yes, I have heard it every time I saw Maiden. So that even made it better and made it special. And actually, Maiden covered that song as well with, I think, Blaze Bailey, right?
It wasn't that sure good.
Did. I liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
I don't like the way Nico plays drums on it. It's just so blah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Lou, did you happen to get the... There was a Fast Eddie Clark anthology CD that came out through Sanctuary back in the early 2000s, and it actually has the Fast Way demos with Pete Way on those tracks.
I'd love to hear it because I've never heard it.
Yeah, it's like I think it was maybe three songs is all were actually released. I have some other like Fast Way demos that I have like on a CDR, but I'm not sure who's on it. It doesn't have any. You know, details or anything, but yeah, the Fast Eddie Clark anthology CD says that it is Pete Way on those tracks, and that was just crazy the way that whole thing worked out. I mean, you know, it's like Chrysalis would let him play on another record label. I don't know. I guess when you're under contract, you just can't go out and do another album or whatever, or do something for another company back then.
Right. And then the funny thing is that they did the one album for Chrysalis, which was Love Loaded. No, Vices, yeah. I'm sorry, that had the single Love Loaded. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they dropped them and they joined with Music for Nations. Yeah. So I was like, well, I guess you could.
Gotta love this.
We got a Harpo Marx here, Wayne. pulling everything out of his trench coat.
I always thought the guy in the corner looks like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror.
Oh my God, I thought the same thing. And the model looks like Carolyn Monroe a little bit, but
totally. Yes, she
could be wrong about that.
Yeah, she just had a birthday the other day. Like she's in her like 80s now, I think.
I don't care. She still looks gorgeous. Happy birthday, Carolyn.
Yeah, for sure.
Def 2 Demand says, glad to see Red Sound Review doing the normal Thursday live streams that Ralph usually does. I look forward to watching. I don't think we're really going to stay doing this on Thursdays. Where our usual live show is on Wednesdays at 8 p.m., but we're just doing this because that's when Tony was available.
So. And we're doing something special on Wednesdays for a little bit. So, you know, just stay tuned for that. But really quick, best wishes to Ralph Vieira and to your parents, good sir.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. We miss you, Ralph. So hurry up and, you know, get well because he's got a problem with his leg. He got an infection and all that crap. And that was pants. So it's been having a shitty 2024 so far. But
so far, yeah.
It's only January. Okay. Hopefully he has 11 and a half more months of good times ahead.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hope so. Well, at least he has one. I sent him the new Severed Angel album. It will be out sometime this year. I think around May, right?
Can we announce the date?
I don't give a shit. It's my show. May 5th, the new Severed Angel Skyward is going to come out. So
you're totally wrong. It's May 3rd.
It's May 3rd. That's what I said.
Right.
He's not getting his till May 5th.
But no one's going to hear any new music from it until first weekend in February. So stay tuned.
So stay tuned for that. All right. Let's get into this show. Top five. You want to do songs or albums first?
Let's do songs first.
Let's do songs first. Want me to do my five? Because I don't have any albums.
It's fine, Wayne. Just get out of the way.
Doctor. I bet you didn't see that coming, right?
Is that number one?
That is number one. I don't have these in any order either. It doesn't really matter to me. Lights Out is really cool. I've heard that song from time to time. I probably heard somebody cover that. Anybody covered that song? Because it was very familiar.
Which song?
Lights Out?
Yeah.
Fifth Angel did an excellent cover on their second Fifth Angel album.
That's where I heard it. Okay.
They did the keyboard runs. And they did it with pick slides on the guitar. It just sounded really cool.
That's why I thought that sounded familiar. That's a good album, by the way.
Yeah.
Only You Can Rock Me, Rock Me. I like that one. Love to Love and I'm a Loser. I think it's a pretty good song. I love Love to Love because it's very progressive. It starts off like really slow and then it builds up like towards the end. It's a really, really good song. And a lot of the albums have a lot of good ending songs on them, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And I felt like they started off good. Some in between stuff was kind of like filler to me, kind of just like, whatever. But then when it got to the end, like the song started to get better again. And you know, I like that. So that's pretty good. Harry Barnett, welcome to the show.
Hey, Harry. Two funny things about Love to Love. Number one, that's Steve Harris's favorite UFO song.
Okay.
And number two, Michael Schenker rewrote it as Desert Song on his Assault Attack album.
Oh, wow.
So it's the same riff.
It's very similar. It really is.
Mm-hmm. And he was actually asked about that. And he said, well, I wrote it so I could do what I want with it. So, okay.
Oh, Harry wants to know where's his reaction to his video. He made a video of himself making ice cream. Sorry, Harry, been busy. I haven't thought about your video of making ice cream and I haven't watched it yet to react to it. So give me some time, will you?
Did he use a 3D printer for it?
No, he made real ice cream. This was real.
Okay.
That first UFO show that I saw that I mentioned earlier, I remember, you know, I'm sure you guys are big Maiden fans. And I got there earlier that day when we were waiting to get in the club and we met Paul Raymond out front. And I was trying to get a ticket to get in. And this guy was at the door. He was a British guy. You see people and you recognize them. Going, that guy looks familiar. I said, if you don't mind me asking, what is your name? He goes, Dave Lights. And he was Dave Lights, the lighting director for Iron Maiden, who I'd seen in the tour books over the years. And I recognized him. So he was doing lights for UFO at that show. And I just remember when they were doing, of course, you know, Love to Love, he had the blue and green lights fading in, you know, for the misty green and blue.
Yeah.
So lights on with Dave Lights. Then that
goes lights on with Dave Lights. Exactly. He was just Dave Lights out on that one. Yeah.
Very nice.
All right. Who's next?
I'll let Mr. Tony go.
Okay. Number five, I'm going to go with shoot off of Forcet. Number four, I'm going to go Natural Thing from the No Heavy Petting album. Love these album covers. Hypnosis did such just brilliant album covers for so many bands.
Strong Thurmond.
Some of them, right? They were very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah. I mean, this monkey with...
Yeah, you know, tied up to
the tubes. To the lady. Yeah, it's crazy. The tubes. Number three, I'm going to go to a Paul Chapman era album. The last one he did, Making Contact with Blinded by a Lie.
Oh, I'm going to have to black that out.
Sure. Love Nudity. That. Opening the riff to that song is so cool. I have a friend who told me he heard that song for years. He had recorded it on a cassette off some radio station back in the 80s and just played a bunch of songs that he didn't know for years who it was until he finally one day he found out it was UFOs. And he's not really a UFO fan, but I was riding with him and he was playing a selection of songs and he played that. And I said, oh, you like this song? And he told me that story. I thought it was crazy. So,
has it ever happened to you before with any other bands like that? Have you ever listened to something and just had no idea until like way long?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been several things over the years because I used to listen to a college radio station here in North Carolina that on Friday nights, it was called Chainsaw Rock. And they would play all the, you know, metal stuff. And this was during the you know, mid to late 80s. And they would just play a block of songs. And I'd have a tape in there recording it. But I had no clue who some of it was until years later. I would run across, oh, I know that song, you know. Yeah. Now you would just Google the lyrics and you could figure it out.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. That happened to me once. I brought a Pearl Jam demo tape at a a flea market type thing. Mm-hmm. And all his demos were recorded on other cassette tapes. Like he just taped over other shit.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it was this song. And it was just this guy screaming battle zones. And I'm like, what? This is awesome. But it was only the tail end of the song. So I never got to hear the rest of it for years and years and years until I finally got to be a fan of Jagdpanzer. I bought that album, their first album. And the song was on it. I'm like, holy shit. It was like probably 20 years after I heard that song. So
Eddie Vedder taped over a Jagdpanzer tape.
I guess so.
Wow. Yeah.
That's blasphemy.
Yeah, that's a trip. Okay, number two, I'm going to go to my favorite album by UFO, Phenomena, for Space Child.
I love that one.
Just a very just mellow tracks, really, really cool. Number one, it's a title track from the Lights Out album. Just love Lights Out. Great song.
Very cool.
I have a bootleg. It's a BBC recording. It's a bootleg CD from the Phenomena era. and they're doing songs live in the studio for BBC Radio, and you hear two guitars, and it's they introduce the band, and who the DJ introduces them as UFO. He calls them UFO. But they introduced the band, and it's Paul Chapman. So Paul Chapman was in the band. They tried to work two guitarists at one point. So you've got two guitar players, he and Schenck are playing together on these recordings. It's pretty neat. Yeah. And of course, he would get called back several times. Every time Michael would quit, they'd call Paul.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
All right, Lou, your five songs.
So my five favorite, I'm going to go in order 5-1. Number five, Dr. Doctor, just because it's a killer riff. Love to Love. I love it for the same reasons you do, Wayne. I think it's, I'd hate to call it a power ballad. I mean, it is a ballad, but it's such a hard, when it's dynamic, and that's what I love about it. Yeah. Lights Out. I've had the honor of playing the song Lights Out twice, once on bass and once on guitar. And yes, I did do the pick slides when I played it. So, I tried to stay true to it. Number two, I'm going to go with Let It Roll, just because I love the way that, again, dynamics. You know, Schenker was a master of dynamics. And number one, to me, the greatest UFO song is, in my opinion, Rock Bottom. I just love that. That is a true exercise in guitar mastery. Very few guitar players that I could say, when they take the spot like that, it captures my interest. And Schenker is in my, he's definitely in my top five. It's, I mentioned it before. It's Iommi, Van Halen, Rhodes, Blackmore, and then comes Schenker. But there's three songs that I do recommend that people should check out if they really want to appreciate UFO. Number three, Pack It Up and Go, off the Obsession album. Number two, Highway Lady, off of No Heavy Petting. And my one track I really recommend is We Belong to the Night off Mechanics. Now, I'm not a fan of the album Mechanics, but I do love that song.
Great song, yeah.
Very interesting. Depth of Demand says he loved the Fifth Angel cover for Lights Out that Tony mentioned, but he never really got into UFO. Yeah, me neither.
It's
I don't know why though. None of my friends ever talked about UFO, and I really never heard much about UFO. The only time I did really hear a lot about UFO was what's his name from the metal show,
Eddie Trunk,
because that's all he would ever fucking talk about. So
yeah, he loves them.
The reason why UFO never took off was that they had their opportunity with Strangers in the Night. And then when they toured the States with Paul Chapman instead of Michael Schenker, it killed them in the United States. Like, it was still a successful tour, but people were interested in it because of Schenker. Now, remember, when Obsession came out, that was when Van Halen 1 came out. So Eddie was raising the bar for guitar based rock bands. And, Schenker at the time, I would think, would be a number two right behind it. But then, he quit because apparently he said he told Phil Mogg, he said, if you punch me, I will quit the band. And Phil liked to bust his balls a lot. And Phil punched him. Michael quit. That's what Michael says. So take that for what it's worth.
And Phil Phil had been a boxer at one point too.
Yes,
so he liked to fight.
Yes. So 1980, you had No Place to Run with Paul Chapman, and you had Michael Schenker Group debut album. I think it's safe to say that more people were gravitating towards the Wunderkind, Michael Schenker. So that's kind of what killed it for them, which is a shame because, again, one of my favorite debut albums.
Yeah, great.
With the OBI. Anyway, so
there's a couple, they did different, some of the presses, I think, like there's like a couple of different covers where his hands are open in some shots and some they're closed.
That's the one I recognize.
And the back cover's different as well. People are just, you know, it's like a different, maybe a, you know, the photographer's taking a bunch of shots and it's maybe like two shots later or something. So yeah, somebody's in a different position. It's crazy. But hypnosis is nuts.
But that's the reason why UFO, unfortunately, it kind of didn't work out in their best interest. But that doesn't take away from the quality of the songs or the albums or the songwriting. And, you know, UFO did probably more touring in the last 20 years than I think they ever did in their entire career. I mean, I think they'd come to Long Island every year, three times a year, Wayne. You know, they played Mulcahy's, they played the Crazy Donkey, they played Revolution.
Wow. Those little places.
Yeah, all those places. So wow. if they could plug in, they played.
That's really weird. Funny. All right, let's move on to the albums. Tony?
Okay, for top five albums. All right. So number five is going to be the reunion album with Schenker, Walk on Water, which I just got on vinyl recently. So glad this finally came out on vinyl.
Good choice.
Is that one of your top favorite reunion albums, like out of a lot of bands?
It would be for sure. Okay. It was a very strong album. The two that followed what they did with Schenker, I thought were very uninspired, but that album was like totally like what would have came after Obsession for sure. Ron Nevison produced it as well.
You know, the amazing thing is about that album, the band that reunited played on it, Psycho Circus.
Exactly. Good point. Good point there, Luke. Number four, Wild, the Willing, and Innocent. I got to throw one of the Chapman albums in, and I think this is my favorite of the bunch. Gonna say number three would be Force It. This is the deluxe edition that came out a couple years ago with the bonus live album.
That album cover would not go by today.
Yeah, and there's some different versions of that. Some of them, I think my original one here, this was the, I guess in the UK they were able to get away with it, but in the US they had to, you can see they had to blur out.
Oh yeah.
And a friend of mine has one. I forgot where it's from. I think it's a U.S. press, but it was like sold in like Kmart's and stuff, where they just took a picture of Michael Schenker, like a square. It looks like a baseball card, and they laid it right on top of the couple to cover him up.
You know, the funny thing is the two models on that were apparently like they were anarcho-communist artists, so they had no problem being photographed in the nude.
Yeah. Number two is going to be Lights Out. And I have pre-ordered the new deluxe edition of Lights Out that's coming out on vinyl as well. It's got
What is that a cover? Like, what's in that cover? Like, what is going on?
So Michael Schenker's in the photo. He looks like he's working on a machine or something. You've got Phil Mogg standing up front with some coveralls on. And of course, you don't see the other guys. You just see the pictures on the back of each individual.
Strange cover.
And then number one is definitely Phenomena. This is the deluxe edition of Phenomena as well. When I worked in screen printing back in the 90s, you couldn't find any UFO shirts anywhere at the time. So I just made a black and white shirt like this. I put this picture on with the UFO logo, the popular squiggly line UFO logo. And I've seen bootlegs on eBay of my bootleg shirt. Or would buy them and then they would copy them.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I should have just showed there. There's my Lights Out on 8-track.
Holy shit.
and it does work. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that new deluxe edition of that album. It's so great. You know, I will say I know a lot of people like Obsession. I've never been a huge fan of Obsession. I like it, but it's not one of my favorites. But you're talking about album covers, and that has got to be the oddest album cover of all.
Very weird. What's that, like thumbtacks or something on there? Or?
Ball bearings.
Oh, ball bearings. Okay.
Yeah. You hear Phil talk about the ball bearings cover. And so you got Pete Way and Phil Mogg with their hair slicked back in suits and ties with ball bearings. And they just put Schenker in a shirt and told him to stand there, you know. And and you've got Paul Raymond and Andy Parker on the back.
Wow.
Same situation, you know?
So weird.
Yeah, it's got to be weird. I would imagine that those are all just paste, like cut and paste.
Right,
I don't think they stood there with ball bearings in their eyes for the photos.
I highly doubt that. You know? Pilot says Venus is in his top five songs.
Yeah, great song.
Def to Demand says he's been a screen printer since 1989. Wow, get us a deal on some shirts, bro.
Yeah, come man.
On. Hook us up. All right, Lou.
Before I say my top five, can I include a live album?
Yeah, man, there's no rules. Now, okay, I mean, okay. Now if we had said that, the live album could have been number one for me, but yeah, but do it. Go it. Go for
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you, because that album is just too damn important to me.
It is. It All is. Right, very
so,
important.
Actually, Tony, I'm going to agree with you. Number five for me is Walk on Water. And I agree with you. I think it's, if it's not one of the best reunion albums, well, I got to include Brave New World up there. So it is one of the best reunion albums. I was going to say it is the best, but, you know, I do love Brave New World and I do love The Devil You Know. So
I love Perfect Strangers. I think
yes, that one too. So it's up there for one of the best reunion albums. And, you know, they really sound inspired on it. Schenker's playing like a beast, you know, and I think Ron Nevinson did a good job redeeming himself after the travesty known as a Crazy Nights and Ultimate Sin. Although I do like those albums, but this one's
too,
better.
But this yeah, one's I, much I see better. Your point. Yes.
Number four, I'm going to go with my UFO Gateway album, Misdemeanor. It is poppy. It is overproduced. It wasn't meant to be a UFO album. Phil Mogg wanted to record new music after UFO had broken up. He discovered Tommy McClendon through Mike Varney over at Shrapnel. And, you know, I think the only other member from the classic lineup that was willing to work with him again was Paul Raymond. So they were going to call it something else, but he was still contractually obligated to Chrysalis. I'm glad this label is no longer in existence because they've really screwed a lot of people over. You know, so he was contractually obligated to release music under the UFO name since he, at the time, he was the owner of it. And I still love it. I mean, you know, I could still listen to the songs today and still get that jovial feeling I felt when I was a kid when I first heard it, thinking, oh, wow, this UFO album is really good. I still think it is really good. You know, I saw the live footage of them from that tour that they did, and it was really cool. You know, hearing them, you know, play, it was like eight songs off the album. And then they did, it was nine songs off the album. And they also did Only You Can Rock Me and Dr. Doctor. And I thought Atomic Tommy M was a superb guitarist. And I'm happy to say that he's still playing. And he's also still, you know, recording music, and he's also teaching music. So he's doing very well for himself. And I hope, Tommy, if you're watching this, open invitation to Rat Salad Review anytime.
He did two good albums with a band called Soul Motor. I don't know if you ever heard that, Sla.
I have a funny story about that. So I was supposed to interview Soul Motor in my college radio days, and I had forgotten. And I felt so bad. That was like the one time I forgot. If you're going to interview a band, if the whoever's marketing them is scheduling you to do an interview, live up to your word. Live up to your word. Otherwise, it doesn't look good on you. So I am sorry to Tommy for that and Brian Wheat and anyone else who was involved. So, but it was a good album, yes.
Yeah, he did. They did too. I thought the second one was even better. It was just kind of a dark record, but they were good albums.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think it's out of print because it was on CMC International Records.
Yeah, I was working there when the second album came out.
Were you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So were you working there when Annihilator released their reunion album and Carnival
yeah, like
Diablos?
The Criteria for Black Widow and
that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was my gateway album to Annihilator, and Carnival Diablos is my favorite Annihilator album.
That's a great one. That's a great one. Yeah. What do you think, not to interrupt your countdown here to this, but what do you think of the difference between on misdemeanor, the U.S. mix and the European mix? The U.S. mix to me sounds like it's got more keyboards. It just sounds more keyboard heavy, like they were really trying to push this. This EP was like a U.K. released of the it's like but it's the U.S. mixes of some of the songs where the keyboards are just super loud in the mix.
I'm okay with the original version of it. I mean, keyboards don't bother me.
Yeah,
we have a keyboard player, Wayne.
Yeah, but I guess you know with some of the like Europe and all was so popular right then with Final Countdown and stuff. Maybe that's why it was so big in the States. Maybe that's why they remixed it for the States. Maybe I don't know.
I actually want to see one thing though, because I do have it on my Apple Music, but this misdemeanor edition I have, yeah, it's got the bonus tracks. Mm-hmm. So the US remix. So I think I prefer the UK remix. The UK
I like
mix.
The UK version better myself. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Number three, I'm gonna go with The Wild, the Willing, and the Innocent. You know, all the credit in the world to Paul Chapman. He's not Michael Schenker, and he doesn't have to be Michael Schenker because he's Paul fucking Chapman. And, you know, having him with Pete Way, Andy Parker, and Neil Carter and Phil Mogg, you know, that was their first album that they wrote together. And to me, it holds up with what I think is their best studio album, which is my number two, which is Lights Out. You know, I mentioned Misdemeanor was the first UFO album I heard, but Lights Out made the biggest impact on me. And again, it's with that album, I just learned about dynamics, how it could be heavy, but you could throw a little lightness in there. And then all of a sudden just smack the listener in the face, just, you know, take them on a trip, you know, and, you know, it's funny. They never lost their spaciness because they always took you on a trip with their music. Wayne, I know you'll disagree with me, but that's okay.
Took me on a trip right to the bathroom.
Were you heaving or number two?
Number two.
Son of a bitch. And then my number one favorite, and I think it's the greatest live album of all time, and that's with all due respect to Kiss Alive and Thin Lizzy's Live and Dangerous, but I love me some Strangers in the Night. To me, it's got, he knew what I was going for. to me, that's got the best versions of those songs on it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, I could just get lost in listening to that. You know, like I could just sit there and just appreciate it, soak it all in. Or I could be in the car and I could be driving down the LIE listening to Rock Bottom. And I'm like, this is awesome. And then I'll see a cop and I'll slow down to 55 again. But that's okay.
did you get the box set of all the recordings for the album?
I did not, but it is available on Apple Music. So
yeah. You can still find it. It's actually pretty reasonably priced at most places now, because the first run of them like sold out and then they made some more. But, you know, they redid an anniversary edition of Strangers in the Night, you know, back in I guess it was the late 90s, early 2000s, I guess. And
with some extra tracks, right?
Extra tracks. And even though that's the way the album, I mean, that's the way the concert started. They opened with Pack It Up and Go. And
No, I'll tell you right now. That was usually the second song they played on it.
They opened with a different song. It wasn't Natural Thing. I can't remember what it was, but
it was Hot and Ready.
Hot and Ready, and then Pack It Up and Goes on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they did Cherry, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so used to hearing Natural Thing come on after that UFO. And like I said, the first time I saw them live, that's what they did as well. I never could gravitate to listening to that other version, because I got to hear Natural Thing played first, even though that's not what they opened with. But yeah, man, I mean, it's cool. You know, for sure.
I think the reason why I like that 15 track version the most is because it actually has the songs that were recorded during that tour that didn't make it to the live album. And there's two songs on Strangers of the Night that they, I think they recorded in soundcheck, which is, let me guess, it's Mother Mary and I think it's This Kid's. But still, great.
Because I'm a Loser didn't have the guitar solo on it originally, and they had to go back and add the opening guitar solo on I'm a Loser. I think it said they didn't have part of it or something. They had to go back and fix it in the studio or something like that.
Well, I think the funny thing is about Strangers of the Night is that Schenker was not happy with the solo that was captured from the tapes that they mixed, and it led to his wanting to leave the band, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, because that's one of the best solos that they captured a tape.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I was very happy with it, but he's Michael Schenker and I'm not.
If you can see, that's my Lights Out CD cover that I got signed at that first show that I saw him at, and Simon Wright signed it. And it's like, I'm one of those guys that usually don't like to get somebody to sign something that's not on it, but he was at the table and they had a little meet and greet afterwards and he signed it. But years later, I mean, it was probably 15 years later, I go and I see him again at the same venue, and I got Andy signed the back of it, called Andy out back after the show and got to talk to him. When he signed my Walk on Water CD too, which everybody signed.
Very cool. I will say this though, the Werewolves of London live album that they recorded with Simon Wright sounds as good as Strangers in the Night, but
and you know, that was a lot of turmoil with Schenker at that period. That's when Schenker had kind of, he had dyed his hair black and he was coming out in the black trench coat. And I think there was
was it that time? Because I thought that was 95. It was 98 he dyed his hair black.
The pictures that are on that album, he looks like that. Maybe it's just because they released it later, but I don't know. But it is a good recording. And, you know, Cleopatra Records has just reissued that. They put it out on vinyl. And they're putting a ton of these UFO live albums out on vinyl. They did this set a few years ago. This is a CD set. It's four CDs. All four shows are Chapman era shows, and it has an album, one vinyl in it. That's a Mick Bolton show from the early 70s. But they're putting like all of these individual shows out on vinyl, and couple of Schenker shows, including the Werewolves of London. They've put that out now.
Yeah, I think they also just put out two. They put out Walk on Water recently, and they put out what's the name of that album? It was the one they did with Lawrence Archer.
High Stakes and Dangerous Men.
Yeah, and I actually picked up those two off eBay because they were out of print. You couldn't find them on streaming, and I was like, well, I'm gonna go out and get the physical copies. So
yeah, High Stakes. Yeah, that was a good album. That was a pretty good comeback. I remember that. Remember that UFO documentary that came out? I'm gonna have it on VHS when it originally came out, called The UFO Story. And it was done, and they interviewed Schenker. It was right before they did the reunion, and they had live footage of them with Lawrence Archer. It was Pete Way and Phil Mogg and Lawrence Archer, and I don't know who the drummer was.
Clive something. It wasn't Clive Burr. No, it was
Clive Evans or something. Something like that.
He played with Adrian Smith in
the ASAP band.
No, not ASAP. It was the Untouchables when his 93 project that he was trying to strike with. And I think he actually, during the Rock or Bust video shoots, I think he was the fill-in for Phil Rudd too. I just wish I could remember his name. I remember his first name was Clive, but that's about it.
I'll tell you a funny story. I met Simon Wright at that show, that first UFO show that I saw, but I ran into him several times over the years when he was with Dio. And he was never really happy about the way things ended with him and UFO. He was just telling me how Michael Schenker fucked the band all up, and that's why it ended up with they had to do the Mog Way project and stuff. And so I would go to a Dio show once, I think it was in 98, and we'd gotten there early, we're kind of hanging out and stuff, and this girl was working the show. She says, hey, can you got your car, you got it. She said, can you come to the hotel and help me pick up the band from the hotel and bring them back to the venue? So I said, sure. So I go, and Tracy G, the guitarist from Dio, and Simon Wright, they end up riding with me. And I had a UFO sticker on my car, and he walked up, he saw it, and he goes, you know what that stands for? Unfucking organized.
I don't fault them. I really don't fault them. It was sad, that whole story. I think the only reason why Schenker agreed to reunite with them is because it transferred full ownership of the name to him.
Yeah.
And which is why they had those two releases on Shrapnel, Covenant and Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a performance with Uli John Roth where he was just so drunk. And, you know, again, the band imploded. Phil Mogg's like, I want the name back. And Schenker just gave it to him. So he transferred over to him at no cost. And
yeah, I saw an interview where Schenker said he couldn't. They told him, we can't work without the name, you know.
And that's why they released Mogway, as a way to still be UFO associated, although not call it UFO. So those are, you know, two unofficial UFO albums.
I'll show you these as well. This is a couple of singles, a couple of 12-inch singles from the Chapman era. And I had brought these that night that I met Paul Chapman, and he wrote, you know, he wrote on me, he wrote pretty big. Well, I gave them to a friend who was doing the UFO meet and greet when I didn't get to go to that show that I wanted to go to, that I said that Phil was sick and they ended up canceling. My friend ended up seeing them at another show sometime around there. So I mailed him the albums. It was down in Atlanta, I think it was. Or I can't remember where he went to see him, because it wasn't Atlanta, because that was the one that got canceled. But anyhow, he got Phil, Andy, and Neil Carter to sign these records.
Nice.
And he said it was so funny. He goes, he gives the records to Phil, and Phil sees Paul Chapman's signature really big. And he goes, when did you meet Paul Chapman? And my friend said that they belong to a friend of mine. He met him, and you know, he wanted me to get these signed for him. And he goes, hey, Andy, look how big Paul Chapman wrote on this bloke's album. It says a lot about a man's character. He writes that big on someone's record.
I guess it didn't end well with them, huh?
I guess not. And Paul told me that this photo here of the band actually has Billy Sheehan in it when he had replaced Phil on the tour, and that they just cut Billy Sheehan out of the photo for the album picture.
Yeah, because he was the bassist on the Making Contact tour, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wayne, I feel bad that you're not partaking in the conversation. I mean,
I got a conversation going on here in the chat, so that's
fine. He's loving it.
Yeah. I wish you were into UFO as much as we were, but thanks for the opportunity to at least let us talk about it.
Man, sure.
I was. And I know you like UFO so much. And then when Tony mentioned it, I'm like, all right, we got to do a UFO show. So you happy now?
I'm very happy. I'm
good.
Happy I get to talk. Wayne,
could you salvage one album that you really liked, Bum, at all? No. I would say if you just had Strangers in the Night, you would love it.
I own that one that you picked as number one.
Phenomena.
Yeah, I own that one. And Strangers, I own the best of.
You know, if someone says, well, I'm just a casual fan, I'd say you got to own Strangers in the Night. I mean, if you got to pick one album to own by UFO, that's it. The live album.
Yeah, that's, I always see that. And I always think it's Paul McCartney, because he looks like Paul McCartney on the front cover of that. Does he not?
Never noticed that, but it does. But yeah, it's Paul.
See?
It's
Paul McCartney. It looks like Paul McCartney.
Yes. I saw where they did that. Eddie Trunk did his 40 years in radio, 40 years into business or whatever party recently. They had the stage pass that all the bands and performers had was a takeoff of that.
Oh, really?
Eddie's face.
What an insufferable prick. I'm sorry. I can't. I can't.
Well, this was very fun, even though I didn't get to talk too much, but you know what, I like listening to you guys talk about this, because I like hearing cool. other people get so excited about the, you know, the bands that they love, so it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for fun sure times.
And I enjoyed all the people in the chat, and so we'll be back sometime. I don't know, like I said, this isn't a normal thing doing it on Thursdays. I mean, it's, I like, you know, everybody's in here chatting and everything, but our normal show is on Wednesdays. I'm not taking over Ralph's time, and another show that airs on Thursdays, I'm not going to get involved with that one either. But at some point we'll be back with Ralph, and yeah, so everything will go back to normal at some point. But thanks to everybody coming and watching. Buy the Seven Angel album if you haven't got the first one yet. Next one is coming May 3rd, called Skyward. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And video's coming out, what, February 1st?
Well, the album reveal will be February 3rd.
Okay.
So once that happens, you'll be able to pre-order the album, and you'll get the track as a download, and the video will be available made around the same time.
Okay. You confused me there. All right. Whatever you said. But yeah, yes. Sounds good. It's going to be a lot of fun times. And then also Absalon's going to come out with an album. I'm on that as well. And Project Resurrect is coming out with something too. But we'll see.
And a big congratulations to our singer, Alex Repetti, on his wedding.
Yes, congratulations, Alex. Tony, you got anything going on? I know you're on tons of podcasts. Like podcast horror.
Just been doing the Rock Fantasy Files on Wednesdays, which I was a part of for several years now. And I joined Rocking with B-Rock tonight. We just did earlier tonight, we did an interview with Scott Board from the band No Love Lost and Cerebus. I will have my own YouTube channel coming out, just be videos of me showing records and talking about some stuff from my collections. What I'm going to start off with, it's going to be called The Metal Emporium, and that'll be probably premiering in the next couple of weeks. I've started shooting a few videos.
Oh,
yep.
Good, because I know a lot of people have been asking for that, so very cool. Can't wait. And what about you, Lou? Your show, what's going on with that one? Give up that one already?
Well, I mean, you know, we changed the name from Music is Life podcast to Creative Space podcast because, you know, I've been interviewing more than just, you know, metal musicians. Yeah. You know, I mean, we had Lorelei Shellis, who was engaged to Steve Clark of Def Leppard at one point. We had Phil Collins' wife, Helen, on the show. I've had Lloyd Kaufman on the show from Trauma and John Brennan from The Last Drive-In. So, you know, my buddy Bob Mango and I are talking over ideas on what to do next. You know, but really I've just been focused on Rod Side Review and Severed Angel and, you know, the dad life.
Yeah. Dad life. Cool.
All right, cool. All right. Again, everybody, we'll see you next week. Actually, no, I don't know when Rat Sound Review is going to be back on, but we're doing a Kiss discography thing. So once we're done recording all that, we'll upload it and you can check that out. But then we'll be back at some point with some regular shows like this one.
All right? Worst to best discography, according to Greg.
Yeah. But it was fun. See you guys next time. Goodbye.
Cheerio.
Guys.